What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron, go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, get every episode for free, right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. I would just like to point out that I am hereby declaring myself immune from any prosecution for anything that I say today or in the past. The day that I get fired or retire, but probably fired, it's radio. I kid, but not really. Everything I've said before I will be immune from as well. No defamation suits. You cannot come after me once I'm out. Okay? I just want to say that. In a completely unrelated story, the U.S. Supreme Court hearing arguments right now, the oral kind, to decide on whether or not Donald Trump has immunity for stuff that he did while he was in office, and maybe even some stuff afterwards, but really mainly while he was in office. We're going to test the boundaries of what he is or is not immune from prosecution for doing. And the problem with this case for us Americans is that there's a lot of nuance. It's a complex question. There's previous precedent, obviously. There's law. There's constitutional interpretation. There are rulings. There are all sorts of stuff. And there's like four different indictments against the guy. So, it's a complex case. Supreme Court is looking at former President Donald Trump's, quote, absolute immunity defense today. This is according to the Washington Times. I got to tell you right off the bat, I don't think a president has or should have, quote, absolute immunity. That's a recipe for a tyrant, right? Think about that. Absolute immunity, just anything. Like the president can do anything at all and never get charged. Like that doesn't seem good. A favorable ruling could nullify many of the criminal charges against him. The case is groundbreaking. No other former president has been in Mr. Trump's situation or asserted protection from prosecution for actions while in office. Mr. Trump has asked the justices to dismiss a federal indictment accusing him of a conspiracy to subvert the 2020 election. This is one of the cases. He faces another federal criminal case over his handing of the classified documents. There's the case down in Atlanta with Fannie over the 2020 election and a New York case over the hush money payments, which I went over yesterday. Experts said that the cases dealing with Mr. Trump's actions while in the White House could collapse if the justices accept his argument for broad immunity. Now, this is the Washington Times. I don't know. I don't believe all of the cases would, quote, collapse. For example, I think the documents case might survive because it happened afterwards, right? But I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, it depends on how far-reaching this thing could be. Tom wants to. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Hello, Tom. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm all right. What's up?
Ask whether, you know, this immunity plea on Trump's behalf, because he was president, would be even plausible. I mean, I thought that no one was above the law. And if he's doing wrong as an individual, then he shouldn't even be allowed to be considered. Because given politics in America are one thing, but the converse of that is, you know, we need people that are stand-up individuals that can make rational decisions for this country, and that is for the best interest of the safety and security of the country. That's no new rhetoric. I'm just saying, why is Trump even allowed to be even considered to run for president again?
So, because I could tell you is that, number one, he has not been convicted of anything, right? Number two, he's over the age of 35. He is an American citizen. And he has not been convicted of the impeachment charges that he faced. So there isn't any legal prohibition to him holding office at this time. You're asking why he should even be allowed to run for office, and that's the answer, is because he's not been convicted of anything.
That's the same thing with other cases, you know, where you have people that have come forward and said, oh, this guy acts really bad. In the case of Weinstein, he's acting really bad, but then it's categorized as a mismanagement case, so he has to be retried on new evidence. I mean, that's not making good judgment.
Well,
I think that we need good judgment going forward in this country, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Have you seen the recent election cycles? Have you met voters?
I have met people that are not in favor of Trump, and I've met people that are diehard fans of Trump, and I have decided to stay right in the middle. Put it that way. I don't want to be on either side of it.
No, I understand.
I mean,
you think a lot of what?
A lot of people are starting to act that way. They're starting to catch on to the idea that what's best for this country is not to, you know, have a floodgate at the border and not just pay patronage to every, you know, whimsical idea. In my opinion, I don't know how far my opinion stretches, but I've just been trying to, you know, I'm 60 years old, so I've been around this country since I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And I see many different things. For one, national, you know, mandatory service for the country. If you had mandatory service in this country, it would straighten up a whole bunch of bad actors.
Mm.
And if you come to this country illegal, if you cross that border and you want to be part of this country, in my opinion, there must be a period of mandatory service to this country. Civilian, I'm not talking about like growing warriors that can fight. I'm talking about service to the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the New Deal that I propose,
right,
based on the original New Deal that put people back into, you know, the seats of their pants.
So do you think that the government has a right to your life?
I think the government is an institution that regulates.
That's not what I asked.
It regulates the safety and security of the people.
Not what I asked.
From which it resides.
Tom, that's not what I asked. I asked, do you believe that the government has a right to your life?
What do you mean, have a right to my life?
Well, what do you think that means? It means the words, as you would understand those words to be defined, right? Do you think it has a right to your life?
Well, I'd like to hear the second part of your, why you're making that statement, because if you're asking just a plain out statement like that, no one has a right to my life.
Okay.
No one has the right to take my life, and I don't.
I didn't
have
say
a right
take
to
it.
Give my life to anyone else.
Okay. All right. So what do you perceive?
Part of your statement.
Right.
Really?
So do you understand?
It's always a baited statement.
So do you understand? Of course, it's a baited statement, because that's the premise that you've laid out. Well, so Tom, what I'm exposing is that you haven't considered. It seems to me you haven't considered the root of your proposal, which is that for some reason the government does have a right to a portion of your life, which is your time. 2 years of your life, 1 year of your life, whatever. It's still your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, okay. So on the one hand, you say government does not have a right to your life, but on the other hand, you say it does. So just a little bit of your life?
So
I'm just asking about the philosophy. I'm not asking about not asking about in practice. I'm asking about the underlying premise, the philosophy.
The underlying premise is that what will make this society, if you want to call it, versus individualism, versus, you know, other things that you want to throw darts at.
I'm not throwing darts at anything, Tom. I'm asking your position, because what you've expressed is a collectivist idea. And so I'm asking you to defend a collectivist idea.
And I'm not prepared to defend it. I think it's a good idea.
Oh, all right. And so also, great idea, but you're not going to defend it, Tom. I think we have exhausted the point of the conversation. Thanks for the call. So I don't know how what your experience might be with others, but this is how I do it. It's like, if you come in with a proposal or you assert a premise, make an argument, I'm going to ask you why. I'm a big why kind of guy. I like to ask the questions of why. I like to get to the underlying philosophy of why people believe what they believe. So if you're going to come in and say, I want to take a chunk of everybody's life, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, because really, what's the limiting principle on that? Why stop at 2 years? Couldn't it be five? Make everybody serve the government, serve the state, right? That means that you're saying that the state has a right over your life for a certain amount of time with no limiting principle. And I disagree with that. That's a collectivist ideology. I am for personal liberty. I appreciate the call, though. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? All right, let me go over here to Cohen. Hello, Cohen. Welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
I'm all right. What's going on?
Just wanted to talk about, put my opinion about the guy that called just a while ago.
Tom, yes, sir.
And just to clarify, I'm a Vietnam veteran and love this country. And I guess you'd say I might be one of them mega, MAGA, deplorable people.
Okay.
But I remember when Obama was in office, we lost about 25% of our worth. And Trump came in 4 years, we got it back and more. And then the other guy come in, and we lost about 25-35% of our worth again. And I wonder if he's ever been to the grocery store or pumped gas in the last 3 years.
Well, now, I don't know all of Tom's politics. He made the comments about the border. He wants that secured. He claims to be middle of the road. And I have no problem with anything else that Tom said. He just, when he said that his potential solution for what he described as, and he, I'm going to take him at his word that he thinks both of the candidates, or he's not happy with either of the candidates, although he never really said anything about Joe Biden, but he's not happy with the border, but that's Joe Biden's doing. So I assume that that's what he meant, right? So I got to believe that he's not satisfied. So his potential idea or his proposal for a solution would be to have everybody do this community service. And I've heard this idea before, and that's why I asked him whether or not the state has a right to your life. And he said no. And that's why I ask it in that sort of fundamental principle kind of way, because it elicits that very answer. And I did it on purpose, and he noticed that I was doing it on purpose, and I absolutely was, because time is just a measure of your life. And 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, that's still your life. And you're saying that the state has a right to that. And I disagree. I used to be more supportive of that concept, and then I put away that childish way.
I understand. Trump's very abrasive at times, and I wish, like all of us, that he wouldn't tweet and twat X and all that stuff that he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll go to my grave never believing that Biden got more votes than Barack Obama, legal votes than Barack Obama or even Donald Trump. But that's just me.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Cohen. I appreciate the call, and welcome home, sir. Thank you for your service. We appreciate you.
You bet. All right, thank you.
Take care. I never have a problem believing that Biden got millions more votes than Obama did, because everybody was on lockdown, and they mailed everybody ballots. There were so many extra ballots that were out there, so that's never been sort of an unbelievable. Also, we got more people eligible to vote because our population has grown. So I've never had a hard time believing that. All right, I've just seen breaking news, but not really breaking. It happened this morning. Sprinklers set off on students at Harvard Liberated Zone for Gaza solidarity. Some tents are flooded at 4 a.m. in 32-degree weather. I'm calling it the Alfescu flood. It really, or Max Nordeau says, that, well, this is basically genocide. Really, who would have thought that a big open grassy area on a college campus might have a sprinkler system that starts running at 4 a.m? Right. Like, that never happens. What's irrigation? it does actually speak to the privilege of these cry bullies that are on the lawn, right? Think about the privilege where you would not know that this manicured lawn that you're protesting on would have sprinklers set up on it. Think about that. All the people walking around on that lawn, you know, some of them have come across the sprinkler heads, but they don't know what they are, I guess. They literally walk past it and be like, oh, that's interesting. What's that thing in the ground? So privileged, they don't know what a sprinkler head looks like, nor would they even consider the fact that this big open grassy area would have sprinklers that come on. And when they do come on, they would be coming on in the early morning hours because they've never had to program a sprinkler system. Or if you're like me, drag the sprinkler around the lawn for like an hour in the early morning to make sure you hit all of the areas of the lawn. That's the old school way of doing it. Back before we had this fancy under the lawn plumbing and everything. Anyway. Yeah, you just hate to hear about such genocide. Hang on. One other thing there. What do they call themselves? The Harvard... What was this? Harvard Liberated Zone for Gaza Solidarity. Yo, your acronym game is terrible. What happened to the brilliance of things like the Chaz Chop? What are you guys even doing up there? HLZGS? The LZGS? It's just a stupid acronym. Get it together, guys. Come on. How do you expect your memory to live on, right? If you want to be on the, quote, right side of history and all, history has to remember what your name is, and you're not going to remember. They're not going to remember that. Stupid. Okay. Back to the Supreme Court. Donald Trump saying that he's immune, absolutely immune from all of the things that he may or may not have done, that were all perfectly okay, perfect phone calls, perfect everything. He did it all correctly. Even the things he didn't do correctly, he did correctly. Mr. Trump has asked the justices to dismiss a federal indictment accusing him of a conspiracy to subvert the 2020 election by creating a fake dossier alleging that Hillary Clinton paid hookers to pee on a bed. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. No, different case. Sorry, different case altogether. He faces another federal criminal case over his handling of classified documents, another case out of Georgia over the 2020 election, and a New York case over the hush money payments for the 2016 election, which I went over yesterday. Experts said that the cases dealing with Trump's actions while in the White House could collapse if the justices accept his argument. Even a narrow ruling, sending the election interference case back to lower courts to decide, that would push the issue beyond the November election. And so that's really at play here. And Tom, first caller there at the beginning of the show, you know, asking, like, why is he even allowed to run? Well, he's allowed to run, as I said to Tom at the time during the phone call, was that he's not been convicted of anything. And the longer this thing goes on, right, the less likely it is that this is going to be settled before the election, which means he could win and then he could take office. And then maybe he gives himself pardons. I don't know, but that's the way this could shape up. And I had a message on this from... maybe it's David here. Here it is. David said, I learned a lot from your Trump trial discussion yesterday. Despite all of this, let's assume Trump is found guilty. Isn't that appealed in a nanosecond? Yes, I believe it would be. And if that appeal keeps climbing the judicial ladder, doesn't some court along the way toss out the conviction? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Right. Is the bigger play here to find him guilty is the bigger play to find him guilty and put him in jail or keep him tied up in court so he can't campaign? Judge allows early dismissal for jurors to go to a dental appointment, but Trump can't go and attend Barron's graduation, for example. So, David, I think I don't think that's an either or. I think it's a both. A conviction is gravy. I don't think that the conviction is the primary purpose, especially in a case like the one in Atlanta, right? The point is there are all different incentives aligned for these prosecutors who are progressives, right? They get to build up their fame, right? They become the rock star lawyer that went after Trump. They're going to get invited to, you know, do all sorts of speeches. They're going to make a bunch of money on that speaking circuit. they become a hero to the left, maybe parlay it into some appointments to the federal bench under a sympathetic Democrat president, stuff like that. So there are all those incentives for these prosecutors. At a political level, it doesn't matter so much if you get Trump convicted. The point is to keep him tied up in the courts, which actually might be the best thing for Trump, by the way, just because he can't talk while he's in the courtroom. Now, he can't talk before and after, and he's been testing the boundaries of the court's patience on that. But I think the point is to throw all the charges at him because there's a feeling of self-satisfaction that comes with this. The virtue signaling. Like I went over this a couple of years ago. There were some studies, maybe I'll bring them back out, that for virtue signalers, the juice is the squeeze is the juice worth the squeeze, right? The squeeze is the signaling, but the juice that they get are these little hits of serotonin in their brains, and they get a feeling, they get good feelings. And the feelings come from not necessarily saying the thing that they believe to be virtuous. That's not where they get dopamine hits. It's not where that's not the point. Where they get the hit, where they get the dopamine hit is when they know other people hear them. That's what they get off on. The knowledge that somebody has heard me express this virtuous position. It's not a matter of just holding the virtuous position. That doesn't get them the juice. They got to know that somebody heard them have that position. So that's part of this too. So I think it's not either or. It's yes, let's tie them up in court, and then we derive all these benefits, you know, dopamine hits and fame and fundraising and political cachet. But also, hey, you know what? We might actually send this guy to prison. Then he can't become president because he'll have been convicted of a crime, and then he can't become president because we couldn't get him convicted in the impeachment, you know. Got a message from GJM on Twitter. Message says here, Pete, caller Tom's reference to people catching on is a smidge too late now. Trump is the nominee. The voters had their chance and pushed aside true conservatives like Cruz in 2016, DeSantis in 2020 in exchange for a 1990s era liberal Democrat. Well, I will say, Trump was a registered Democrat for most of his life. And, there are a lot of liberals and Democrats who now find themselves surrounded by illiberals, progressives, Marxists, and maybe this is a wake-up call. You know, I keep saying this. The parties are realigning. And if we are able to, I don't know, kind of help along a realignment that is anti-communist, because as I see it, that is actually the biggest threat right now. And if you trace back a lot of this stuff, it all has the same roots. It's all the same Maoist philosophy and tactics. That's what we're seeing on the campuses. It's all Maoism. So we'll get into that. Let me get back to this piece, though. This is Washington Times, as well as from SCOTUSblog.com by Amy Howe on the court case today being argued at the Supreme Court, oral arguments going on. Special Counsel Jack Smith, he's leading two federal cases against Trump. He says the claims that Trump is making are novel and sweeping. He said a former president has to prove he was acting under a specific presidential power to claim immunity, and Mr. Trump cannot point to any power he was exercising when he tried to upend the result of the 2020 election. Trump's people disagree with that, by the way. He said all previous presidents understood that they could face criminal liability once out of office. Indeed, former President Richard Nixon accepted a pardon from President Ford for that very reason, right? That's why he accepted the pardon, so he couldn't be charged. He wasn't convicted in the Senate impeachment trial. He never actually got impeached. So he was going to be, but he wasn't. A ruling in favor of Mr. Trump could affect Mr. Smith's document handling case in a federal court in Florida and the election interference case in Georgia. But the New York hush money case is different because Trump is accused of illegal actions while campaigning for president. So that immunity would not apply to him, right? Any impact on other prosecutions must be assessed on a case-by-case basis. Later on in the piece says the immunity agreement, or argument rather, has delayed Smith's prosecution, and it's unclear whether the case will go to trial before Election Day or not. Smith wants it to, but we shall see. Mr. Smith had asked the justices not to hear the dispute. He said originally, he said the country deserves a speedy resolution to Mr. Trump's case, which is why the cases were brought right before the election after like 4 years of waiting. Oh, no, I kid, Mr. Smith. Of all of the criminal cases, the federal election subversion case is considered to be the marquee case, Jack Smith's case. He secured the indictment based on actions Trump took after his 2020 election loss to Biden, including pressuring state officials and the DOJ to find vote fraud, setting up the false slates of electors, all that. So that all happened while he was in office. And so that's perceived to be the strongest case. I don't know if it is, but that's the perception. And Trump says he was acting in his official capacity in trying to root out election fraud. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.